Hey everyone, and welcome to this week's show. Another great show for you. I know I say that all the time, but no, this one's really great. No, I'm just kidding. Later on in the show, we're going to be revisiting a question related to online dating. Obviously, this is a new question, but more online dating ones are coming in, aren't they, Martha? Martha's here at the table with me.
Yeah. I think more as long as we're talking online. About relationships, yeah, it'll be there.
It'll be there. So this one is about kind of that, the dreaded sex question or sex conversation as it comes up, you know, with the various different sites. Sometimes you just have to ferret out, you know, who's into premarital sex or okay with it and who isn't. So Sam Moorcroft from ChristianCafe.com is going to weigh in on this as far as just some guidelines for how to navigate that. Then for our culture segment, the long-awaited part two of Steve DeWitt's interview, my conversation with him, the bachelor pastor. So I think now, what, he's
formerly
maybe two. Yeah, formerly. I know. And now he's just like tagged as the bachelor pastor. Yeah. But, you know, now he has a couple more weeks of marriage under his belt. Here we are in this conversation, continuing it, finishing it. So great to talk to Steve. And here we are for our roundtable. Very pleased, of course, Martha is here. Hey, Martha.
Thank you for welcoming me twice.
I know. Martha, and then the always great Danny Huerta. Danny, welcome.
Always great.
From wow. I know.
Wow,
from
that was very kind.
From
very
our nice. Counseling department.
Oh, thank you.
I know. Good to have you.
Thanks as for having me here.
You're both your personalities as a counselor and as just a guy.
I appreciate so that. I'm excited to talk to two ladies hats. About this.
Yeah.
We're a little outnumbered here, but it should be all right.
This is good. And this is Dating with Purpose. We're going to talk about this today because some people date with no purpose. Maybe some people date with a little too much purpose. So how do we find out? And we've actually dealt with this question before. We get this question from people. You guys talk so much about intentional dating that I feel like I can't even date and just have fun. So how do I enjoy the dating process without making it a full-time job and like freaking myself out? But at the same time, knowing what I need to know.
I think so. It's a key thing to jump into, just because if not, you end up in our counseling line.
Yeah.
into your marriage, you know, with problems that you did not expect.
Right.
Or that
well,
probably
you were
could
even saying, Danny, you were
before.
Saying that when you get interns, sometimes they listen in on calls and it kind of like scares them, you know, because they're like, I don't want, if this is what I have to look forward to, then one, do I even want this? And two, if I do, how can I avoid it? I
mean, and our number one call, we get about 1,300 calls a week. And the number one calls on marriage, marriage communication, sex and marriage, just a variety of pornography, things like that, just mm-hmm. a variety of topics within marriage. So mm-hmm. it even overrides the parenting and just finances and all that. It's really on the marriage relationship that we mm-hmm. have a lot of conversations on. And yeah, the interns get some pretty interesting stories and mm-hmm. Get kind of scared about marriage.
Yeah. Well, let's talk, I mean, before we get into, you know, you having to tell us what's what and really what we're all doing wrong, because that's going to put us into tears. Let's talk a little bit about our own stories around this and how we either have or have not intentionally dated. I mean, I feel like I did. I mean, I feel like I grew up in this good home with a good structure and a good idea of what I should be looking for. But it seems like sometimes I got bogged down in relationships where either there was a lot of intention and quite frankly, just a lot of controlling behavior in the relationship. Or else it kind of, I was on little rabbit trails and I maybe didn't have enough intention with that. And I kind of let it get carried away without having a good end goal. Martha, where would you say you fall?
Well, I've always felt like the purpose of dating is to find a spouse. And mm-hmm. so that's one reason why I didn't date in high school, because I didn't have any plans of marrying after graduation. Mm-hmm. So I guess to me, that's what being intentional is this a person, something I don't want to marry? Is
right.
kind of the underlying question for the time you're spending together.
Right. Though, I mean, to just occasionally get a free meal, that's very attractive. But we realize that because we work for Boundless, we can't say that.
Well, you have to start somewhere, too. Like, that's...
You do.
I mean, it might require going out for a meal as a first step.
Right. But. So where does that... And Danny, I know, you know, you've shared a little bit of your story of how you met your wife, but where does that switch need to flip then? Because we always tell people, you know, it's like Boundless speaks out of both sides of our mouth. We're like, it's just a date. It's just a date. You know, just ask people out just so you know if they're godly and of good character and they're like normal, you know, just go out for a date. And then all of a sudden we're like, But make sure that as you're moving to marriage, you...
Yeah, it's confusing.
It is confusing. So I don't know. I mean, what would you say, Danny?
You know, I'd say personality has to do a lot with how intentional you become. Some people, like myself, I'm an otter, more of the guy that likes to just have fun and spur the moment. In being with my wife, I've become more beaverish. She's more of the perfectionist, the intentional one. And that's the oneness that is created in marriage. So beforehand, the differences of personality really influence whether or not you're going to be very intentional. And I remember us dating. We dated for a long time, and finally Heather had to say, you know, either we do this or let's just not do it anymore. It was mm-hmm. three years that we had been together, and we had called off our engagement once, and then and then got engaged again and got married. So it was a back and forth deal. And for guys, sometimes it really, you start to think, wow, this is it. Mm-hmm. And this is a big commitment.
If I can interrupt you really quick, Danny, what was it about, I mean, did you think 3 years was okay? I mean, what was going on in your head? What were you waiting for? What, you know, did you think you were being intentional?
I was pretty young. I was okay. I was getting a lot of pressure from my family saying, hey, you're too young. Hmm. I ended up getting married when I was 22 and I was in graduate school. And from graduate school, they had said, hey, don't get married while you're in the program. What did I do the first year? I got married.
Okay.
And they told us that at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of people saying, don't do it. And then Heather was saying, you know, I mean, we need to really move forward. And she was going, she had gotten a job as a teacher. And she said, you know, I can support us that first year.
Mm-hmm.
But we had to talk about some questions. We probably, I think we could have had better premarital counseling. That would have helped us. And asked if we would have asked the right questions while we were having fun, also asking some intentional questions, I think we would have saved ourselves some difficult times in our marriage. I think every marriage goes through difficult seasons, and we did.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in a much better place because of that, and mm-hmm. we've grown tremendously individually. But you will have pain in marriage, you'll have boredom, you'll have a lot of different things that maybe before you get married you don't think about. And the reality, really, I've talked to my wife on this topic, you know, how can people prepare better for marriage? And the reality is it's hard to do that because you're so excited about being married. Guys are thinking, oh, I can, if they're virgins and they haven't had sex, oh, I can finally have sex with my wife. And they have all these thoughts about that. And the last thing they want to sit down is go through a bunch of questions and get serious about it. They mm-hmm. just want to get married. And, oh, let's deal with that later.
Mm-hmm.
And when I do premarital counseling, I'll tell couples, you know what? A lot of these things, they're going to gloss over you. So let's make sure that we have an appointment 6 months or 8 months into the marriage, and then you'll be ready for this.
Hmm.
And at that point, you can experience quite a bit of growth. But that way, you're not embarrassed to make a call. It doesn't mean you're a failure. Just expect it. You're going to have problems 6 months, 8 months into it. That's just the reality of marriage.
Mm-hmm. We talk a lot at Focus, like within our marriage department, about the danger of administrating your marriage after you're married for a while. And these people that go out on dates, you know, married couples, and all they talk about are their finances and their kids and stuff. So I think there is kind of that notion of singles, and we get it from Hollywood and elsewhere, that if you have to have those kind of conversations, it means you're not really in love. It means you're not letting the relationship, you know, grow or be organic or be, you know, we'll throw all these things on it. So where is the balance? I mean, you know, Martha, you're in a relationship. How are you finding a balance with your personality that really wants to check some lists, you know, let's just be honest here, and allow yourself to have fun and get to know this guy?
Yeah, well, it doesn't help that I work for Boundless as well, because every day
We're killing you.
Well, there's so much great content that, you know, I'm just like, you should read this and listen to this and we'll talk about that. And oh my word, poor guy. Mm-hmm. So I've really restrained myself, I think, from doing that, of trying to keep Boundless as Boundless and mm-hmm. maybe using other things to talk through with our relationship. But what I find is a hard balance is wanting the guy to initiate those kind of conversations. I think there's an expectation from women of that's what it means to lead, of mm-hmm. we go through this book of 101 questions, and it feels weird as the woman to bring that up or feel like.
Mm-hmm. And that's your biggest level of bond for a woman is trust, emotional romance. That's how you bond. And for men, it's through a sexual relationship. And so you can really deeply bond in those two areas, but it can also be a very damaging area.
Mm-hmm. And, so what are guys thinking about this, Danny? I mean, are they just like, I mean, I hear from some guys that it's like, you know, I just found someone that I liked and she loves Jesus, and so I just want to marry her. Like, almost like they're just, you know, not really planning anything in particular or overthinking anything. And then the women are like, no, I really need to know this, this, this. I have a lot of fears around this. I mean, do guys go into it and say, I need to find out all this stuff about her?
You know, it depends on your age, your experiences, all that. I think there are guys that are gun shy as well. They really step back and say, hey, you know, I might get hurt again. And then there are the guys that are just going into it kind of fresh and new, and they say, I like this girl, she's Christian, that's fantastic, let's go into this. And the reality is, we all bring histories. We bring history of our attachment with parents, with people, our habits. Habits can really be a big deal. And then how we handle boredom. Boredom is going to be there for marriage, and some people do not handle it well, and that's when you get the addictions and other things going on. So that's an important thing to observe beforehand. And guys are just excited. There's a dopamine rush when you're in love. And so they're going off of that, and that can last up to 3 years. So if you're going off that dopamine rush, yeah, you're going to say, oh, let's just get married. We'll deal with that later. That sounds great. And beavers attract otters. And so a beaver's going to have all these expectations of their boyfriend or their fiance that they may not be able to step into because their personality is opposite. And it's going to take several years into the marriage for them to take on some of your characteristics, Martha, that beaver side. And that's a real good thing to have in the home, the beaver and the otter. But the balance is good because if you have too much...
Do we need to explain what the whole beaver otter?
Well, I'll throw it in there. Yeah, that's a good idea. The beaver otter, you can look it up online. Lion and golden retriever. That's something that John Trent, his work. They came up with those animals to the quadrant. There's also, if you've heard of sanguine and melancholy, there's about 200 and some of these quadrant tests that either label you as some type of animal. And and there's, you know, the parrots, Les and Leslie Parrott, have you guys heard of them? They did the love book, L-O-V-E, and it's leader, optimist, validator, encourager. So you get the same thing, but in a different book. And that's a great book as well. It talks about intimacy and how different personalities handle it, communication, those things.
So answer this for us, Danny. How can we as women see leadership in a guy, or how can we figure that out or ferret it out if it's maybe not exactly what we think it should look like? I mean, how do we know if a guy's being a leader, but just maybe not in our style? Like Martha said, you know, she assumes that a guy is going to be like, you know, leading this, initiating this conversation, doing this, this, this. Maybe he's just like a super laid back guy. But how do you make sure that, okay, he still has leadership qualities and he's not just a total loser?
You know, I think the key things in the dating relationship is to be able to observe your boyfriend and how he serves you. If there's intentionality in that area, the humility piece, the selfishness piece, those are key areas that'll tell you a lot about how willing he'll be to take the lead in the home. Men may not be, there's maybe some guys that are just not as strong as the woman in their spiritual background, but if they're willing to learn, if they're teachable, if they have a teachable heart, they're willing to learn that, and they'll be much more willing to take on a bit of your personality. And so really looking and observing how they treat other people, how they treat their own parents, it truly is. I remember somebody telling me in high school, hey, the way you treat your mom is the way you're going to treat your wife. I'm like, oh, that's crazy. And it actually, it does turn out that way. You have to recognize that and then make changes. Thankfully, I did treat my mom well, but I could see how I communicated with my wife similarly, how I communicated with my mom. So. Not that I married my mom or anything. You know? So, that sounds weird, but it really is. It is true. So, as guys step into this, it sounds very serious, yet it is because of commitment. I think one of the questions I'll have couples ask each other: what does it mean to be unfaithful? What does that mean? Some people will call her lying and they'll say, "Oh, well, I just kissed, you know, this other person. Seems pretty unfaithful to me, you know." So, what does that look like? What does it look like to be in a faithful relationship with your wife? Are you prepared for that? And are you willing to talk about difficult things? And what are the expectations around romance from the wife? And what are the expectations about sex? Because those are the two probably insatiable needs of both. Women could have all the emotional romance and never say, oh, that's enough. And guys, the same thing with sex. So it's being able to, where do we draw a line on that?
So let's talk a little bit about expectations in a dating relationship, because I know one of the guys I dated, we had gone through this list of questions, and basically we answered the questions, and then we found out further down the line when our relationship imploded that I thought we were answering the questions for the purpose of, could we eventually move towards marriage? He assumed that in answering the questions, that means we were going to get married. And so then, obviously, I was like, I don't think we're on the same page, but thanks for telling me that 2 months down the road, you know? So, I mean, you have some people that just want to have fun indefinitely, kind of, and then you want, I mean, where should that transition take place? I mean, do you have to sit down with a person and say, you know, okay, so now I feel like we need to start asking more intentional questions, or now I feel we need to stop just doing movies and a pizza, you know, or something. I guess I don't understand. Should that just happen naturally? Or
those DTR moments are pretty awkward.
Yeah, they are.
I don't think there's ever a really easy
then they're
transition.
Like, oh, actually,
into
I was
that.
Just going to break up with you. Sorry.
I think you could just maybe preface it with, maybe we can have an awkward date. You know,
we could
just in the middle of a fun date that can really kind of take the sails out. So, I think being clear up front, saying, you know, you yourself being clear, I'm looking at dating towards the intentionality of maybe potentially marrying. You seem like a person that I'd love to get to know with that potential. And there may be a time when we get kind of serious with some questions.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to be okay with that?
Mm-hmm.
And just up front saying that. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, if you're in your 30s compared to if you're 19,
mm-hmm.
it's a much different stage of life that you're in. And so you're going to go with a lot more purpose dating. Whereas at 19, you're saying, hey, I'm just learning this stuff and mm-hmm. I'm just getting to know who I like. And that's when you just go in and just have fun, be friends, enjoy, relax. You don't have to rush into a marriage.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're in your 30s, it's harder to find people that don't have a tremendous amount of baggage. But also you want to ask questions about, hey, what happened the last 12 years? You're mm-hmm. not married. I'm not either. I know I have stuff I'm bringing in.
Mm-hmm.
What are you bringing in here? Yeah. And you know,
awkward.
One question. Yeah. One question that I'll always tell people.
Do you have
I love this
free
question.
Bags or did you have to pay $25 for them?
Yeah.
Yikes. Okay.
No, one question I love is, what is it like to be with me? Because a lot of times we'll ask and interview the other person, but what would it be like to be in relationship with me? What would it be like to be married to me? Is that a good experience for the other person? And I think when we ask that question ourselves and bring that into conversation, it shows that we're not just trying to interview this person are you going to be okay for me to marry? But you're saying, hey, I'm willing to look at myself as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's important in that awkward DTR time.
Mm-hmm. So would you say, I mean, I think, you know, and we can all kind of weigh in on this. When we talk about, you know, there's something comforting, I think, about the questions and the quizzes and stuff that we think we can find out things about these people. Whereas, like for me, I'm not just going to go to a movie with someone for 6 months every Saturday and then be like, I think I could marry you. You know, so, but at the same time, you know, you don't want to, again, get super crazy and up in the person's business. But what would you say, I mean, are these types of things valuable, Danny? I mean, Martha, what for you has been, have you found anything out with quizzes? Have you been?
I've never done any quizzes, actually.
Oh, no quizzes. No Cosmo quizzes.
I think, I mean, there's an element
like
you can
questions and
Cosmo
stuff.
Quizzes.
Study up and read books on your own, too, and just naturally bring up questions. I think that's probably been more my style.
I mean, I guess I'm just wondering, when you get calls from people in counseling, Danny, I mean, are these people that, did they not do enough of that kind of info finding? Or where is this breaking down then? I mean, are these people not knowing about each other or not caring? Or
I mean, I guess I'll break it down to one core issue, and that's selfishness, really, that we carry into the marriage. And so there isn't a prevention of that except for our own self-reflection.
Mm-hmm.
No one can avoid pain in marriage. It's going to be there. There is going to be hardship, but that's what molds you into a brand new person. That's where God said, and I know Gary Thomas points this out, and I love how he points that out, that in his book, Sacred Marriage, that marriage is not intended to make you happy, but to form you in a new person, to form holiness inside of you.
Mm-hmm.
And so there isn't a preventative thing that you can do, but you can be wiser stepping in. If you're going to buy a VCR, you just don't go in there and go, oh, this one looks great, I'll just buy that one. Most people, if they want to have it be a long-lasting product for themselves, they'll research that. if you're going to go to on a vacation, you don't just go, oh, well, this one looks good. Mm-hmm. It looks, the pictures look great. You start to realize, what's the price? What's the cost? And there's a lot of cost to marriage. So you have to figure out, am I willing to pay that price with this person? And how am I going to be towards this person? Am I too toxic to get into marriage? Am I bringing stuff that where maybe I'm not ready for this? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times we look at marriage as a consumer mindset. Am I getting a good product? But really looking at it more as, am I ready to step into a commitment, a long-term commitment, and do I know everything of what I'm stepping into? Mm-hmm. And am I willing to have those awkward moments? Mm-hmm. Am I willing to have fun? Am I a fun person to be with? And mm-hmm. Guys really many times need help on the romance side. Mm-hmm. And women, be patient with those guys. Mm-hmm. And for guys that are wanting to learn romance things, there's plenty of ideas on the internet. Mm-hmm. Mentors can give great ideas. And just get to know the person you're with. They can give you a lot of insight as to what would be good romance. And in those moments, you'll feel more open with each other. There'll be more trust, more bond, and trust from the girl you're with. But do it out of a service and a selflessness. And when you really deal with selfishness inside, that's when you begin to really prevent or lessen the amount of hardship that you have in marriage. Because mm-hmm. when we get the calls, when you get to the core of it, it's selfishness that's created the problem.
Yeah. What would you guys say is the value of watching a person go through hardship? I mean, I think there's an element of, you know, we can watch The Bachelor or The Bachelorette, and I'm just like, seriously, like, I could be the best date ever if I'm in Bora Bora. Let me just tell you that right now. But maybe, like, dealing with a sick parent or with financial ruin or with whatever. I mean, is that something to see a person have to go through that stuff? And then all these people that are now dating online and dating long distance and stuff, how do you figure out that kind of stuff? Is that necessary?
Well, it helps to see, I would say, in different environments, you know, with their family or what they say about work or when they're stressed or frustrated. I think it can, draw you closer or apart mm-hmm. of how they respond to those situations.
Hmm. Yeah, love is a hard thing because especially when you're dating, you have two competing things. You have the desire, and that's a very powerful emotion. And then you have to slow that down and bring unconditional, long-lasting love, which is a decision. But at the same time, you're competing with desire. So it's hard to see clearly. It's hard to mm-hmm. get beyond that fog. And then it's hard to predict how you're going to respond to sickness or, you know, obesity. If somebody all of a sudden has a sickness and they become, you know, they have obesity not out of choice or eating, you know, how are you going to respond to that? If somebody has a mental health issue that comes out in later adulthood, I know couples face that going into marriage, and they weren't dealing with that in dating, but mm-hmm. they had to deal with it later on. So I guess talking about or getting to know the spouse or your not your spouse, but your dating partner, and just seeing how they react to adversity, how they react to conflict. Are they idealistic? Do they look at you just because, hey, you're super hot, and so, you know, I just want to be with you, and that's the depth of where they're at with you? Then
that's been Martha and my problem.
Yeah, the hotness part.
The guys can't even
they can't get past
clearly,
it.
Clearly, I know. Makes it very difficult for
that's
us.
That's right.
But, Well, that's good, you guys. I mean, I just want to thank you guys for having this conversation. I think it's helpful, and I think it's something that we have to talk about, you know, a lot, because I think a lot of people think this, but maybe they're afraid to voice it or feel like they're either being too shallow or too controlling, you know. So I think it's great to see, like you said, a balance in that, and to recognize that what you said, Danny, just about selfishness is the core, really. I mean, it's really what if something's going to derail, it's because you're just making it all about you. And yeah. So both parties, I mean, if there's one question you want to ask, I guess, going into marriage, it's like finding out where both of those people stand on that, their relationship to God and how they view themselves in light of other
people.
You
know, I want to throw something in as well, Lisa. Mm-hmm. A lot of people would be guilty of this. You find your sense of self-worth from other people, mm-hmm. and especially who you date. You mm-hmm. walk into a room. I'd be guilty of this. I remember walking in at college. I had this girlfriend, had long blonde hair, very pretty girl, and ended up finding out she's extremely sarcastic, couldn't deal with that. But I'd walk into a room and boom, you know, heads would turn. And you get a boost of self-worth in there. And then you start to use the other person to make yourself feel better. Super unhealthy.
Yeah.
And that's something you need to watch. Why am I dating this person? Is it to make me look better? Is it to make me feel better? And again, it's that selfishness piece. Or am I willing to love this person as a son or daughter of Christ? I remember one guy, he told me as a mentor, he said, wake up each morning. As you date, look at that other person and see if you're willing to go through marriage and wake up each morning with the idea that you want to do something special for that person, make that day a better day for that person you're with, instead of how can this person make the day better for me? And that has been a real lasting impression in my mind. You know, how can I wake up each morning? And so, you know, I haven't done it each morning, but I've tried to have that in my mind. And that has transformed how I treat her. Whenever I remember that. So as you go in through this dating time, this period of time that you're dealing with your own selfishness and your own insecurities, look at, am I willing to look at this person as a son or daughter of Christ? And that's my father-in-law, and I'll be answering to him. And am I willing to put my needs aside for this person and love them unconditionally?
All right. Well, good thoughts. Thank you, you guys. I also want to let y'all know we have a relationship services department here at Focus on the Family that fields calls, recommends resources, gives referrals to our counseling department, to Danny and others, as well as recommending counselors in your local area. So if you want to give them a call, the number is 1-800, the letter A and the word family. That's 1-800-A-FAMILY. And of course, you can write, if you have a comment on this, certainly comment on the blog, if you have a comment on this conversation or want to continue that or share something from your own story as well. So thank you so much, Danny and Martha.
Thanks, Lisa and Martha.
Your eyes, they shine unlike anything I've ever seen. Your smile, it lights up the sky. I hear your voice, and it's given me a song to sing. Your fire, it's burning inside. So take my hand, take my spirit.
Looking back, again, we said you've been married a couple months now. Have you and Jennifer sat down and thought to yourselves, because I know when I interviewed my friend David Wheaton and a similar story, getting married a little bit older in life, and he had known his wife Brody for a long time, and they kind of had this moment where they sat just briefly and said, you know, why didn't this happen sooner? Why didn't we meet each other sooner? Is there any other way that, you know, not that you go back and regret or trust God's sovereignty in it or whatever, but, you know, have you had to kind of ask yourself either that question yourself or as a couple and then kind of move past that and trust God where he is in your story right now?
I don't think we've reflected like that. Just to be honest, the one regret that we have, I think, is that a lot of life has passed where we weren't in each other's life. You know, it would have been great to, you know, to have been a part of each other's story through some high points in life. But I don't think we have really. It's been, we just kind of see it as God's plan. You know, Jennifer is, she's 32 and has had her own life and career and things that God has been doing in her life. The one thing I think that we have acknowledged is that I'm not sure if we would have met earlier that we would have gone for each other. Because God had to do things in both of our lives to make us the kind of people that then are attracted to each other. And if we would have met 10 years ago, I don't know that we would have dated.
Yeah.
Sounds strange, but I really, you know, God, you know, God's timing is always perfect. So he brings us at the right time, the right people, and but it's speculation. So yeah.
Well, and I'm sure, I mean, and just respond to this a little bit, because this is something that I get all the time, too. I'm sure that as a pastor of a large church with people who really were rooting for you and wanting you to get married, I'm sure many of them cornered you and were like, Steve, seriously, you know, okay, what, you know, are you really trusting God's timing? Are you really, are you just giving up opportunities? Are you blah, blah, blah? Why are you still single? You know, and their maybe frustrations were kind of laid out on you in one sense where, like you said, you had the pastor who kind of jokingly ribbed you about it. But I'm sure there were a lot of people that were like, we want this for you. We want this for you. And, you know, was that kind of a strain after a while in them saying that and feeling like you always had to give some kind of answer that would satisfy them?
Yes, that's been,
yeah.
And you know, the church loves me. I love
them. And I
get
them. That too.
It's,
so I'm
it's
just
a healthy thing.
Yeah.
And I think that the most of it is because they knew I wanted to get married. I would talk about it from the pulpit occasionally. And so they knew it was a desire for me. What bothered me, I would say, is when I would get a sense where singleness was being unbiblically devalued, and where it was kind of like, you know, for your real life to begin, or for you to become whole, you need to be married. And I don't agree with that at all. Mm-hmm. And I, in fact, I would jokingly say most of the unhappy people I know are married. So if marriage is all of that, and if I'm hoping that that's going to be the thing that makes me a real man, you know, then I have a hard time worshiping an incomplete Savior who was himself single, if that is the case. So I've got a little, that's a kind of a little bully pulpit for me. I, even in being married now, I always want to speak of my single years respectfully.
Right.
And not to in some way insinuate that marriage is when my real life began. I don't believe that. I don't believe that at all.
And let's just talk about that for a little bit, because you are very explicit in that statement in your sermon, in the Bachelor Pastor, the one we talked about. And that was to really honor those years of singleness and to look back on those as not only a fruitful time in and of themselves, but also a great preparation for the marriage that you now have. And just give us a little taste of what you learned through your experience of singleness, Steve, in not only how to maximize that season so that you're not looking back on it as just some wasteland of, you know, oh my goodness, now I've arrived, but also because, you know, some of us are hoping, those of us that are still single, we're, you know, hoping that God's somehow using us in our singleness. We're just not sure. No, I'm just teasing. But but at the same time, you know, really how there are many things that we can do as a single person that married people can't do. I mean, there are things that we learn through our singleness that those who got married at 20, 21 don't have the opportunity to. So where do you see that as being the whole package, really, in what God's taught you and how he's grown you through that?
I could talk a long time about this. I'll try not to. I guess I want to be give a strong encouragement not to look at the single years as the warm-up, and that the married years are the real game. I don't see that in the Bible. I see no indication. In fact, I see kind of the opposite of that in chapter 7 of 1 Corinthians, where basically, here's what Paul says is, listen, if you're married, great. If you're single, great. But realize that that is a category in the kingdom that doesn't matter. It's the world is passing away, and that category is passing away. So you really shouldn't look at yourself as being defined by whether you're married or single. And he goes on to talk about how, you know, the singles have advantages that the married don't. Marriage has some privileges as well. And responsibilities. And so I look back on my own experience, and you know, I'm not somebody that lets a lot of grass grow under his feet, and so I enjoyed traveling, I did missions trips, I was involved in ministry, I really gave myself you know, time-wise to the church, and such a blessing, you know, such a blessing. Without ever waving the banner of, you know, must be the celibate pastor. I never was that. I was still looking and praying and all that. But to maximize the opportunities and the freedoms that singleness provides, not for selfish motives, but for kingdom ones. And to say, I'm a Christian, I'm single by the sovereign hand of God. How can I make the most of this for the glory of God? And to enjoy my singleness for God's sake. And so for me, what that meant as a pastor was, lots of nights out that a married man couldn't do. And by out, I mean being in homes and doing ministries and being at the hospital and things like that. It meant, investing, I would say, more intentionally in some things that, like, for example, even my book, I thought, could I have done that, finished, written that book and done all of that if I was married? I don't know. Married guys write books, but it took a lot of time, so maybe God was using that. And just to look at life and to say, I am not in the warm-up, I am not in a waiting mode, I'm not in a wasteland. I am living years and days that matter to God. They need to matter to me, and I can live a life that wisely invests and spend my time and my energies for things that matter in the end. And marriage, in the end, isn't one of those. We're not married in eternity. Mm-hmm. We're all single. Mm-hmm. So that's and I think there's comfort in that it means that every unmet desire that I have in this life is temporary. Mm-hmm. I may be lonely. I may wish that I was married. I may pine for a child. But those are things, all of those unmet expectations and desires are temporarily uncomfortable. This life is short, and in eternity, every unmet desire is met in Christ and in the gifts and the goodness that he gives to us in eternity. So I think from that perspective, it frees then the single to kind of get over the fact that maybe this isn't a part of my life, and to be free then to become the very best godly woman, godly man that I can be. Which I would add as a caveat, actually is what makes me more attractive for being married. Mm-hmm. If I would date a girl and she was just like, "Oh, I'm just laying around hoping God brings a man into my life," I'm not interested in a woman like that. I would have wanted to see, and this is what I ultimately found in Jennifer, a woman who was, she was active in her church and she was doing Bible study fellowship and she was, serving. Now her brother's a pastor, but serving her brother and helping with the kids. She was just involved in so many things. She was making her life count. I found that very attractive.
Sure.
And I married her.
Yeah. That's good.
That was my little rant there. Sorry for that.
No, that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah.
So let's talk. Okay, now I want to turn the corner and talk about sexual purity. Because this is another thing that you mentioned on the front end of your sermon, and basically with recent surveys indicating that 80% of self-described evangelicals have had sex before marriage, you are saying that you made it to marriage at 44 years old, remaining sexually pure, and okay, let's, caveat for thoughts and whatever else, you and the Lord have to deal with that, but sexually pure. I want you to talk to the guys right now, and I want you to say, if you were sitting down with them right now and the women are just going to listen in, how in the world did you do that in a culture? First of all, being a prominent person, being a person in a church around a lot of people, around a lot of women, you weren't in, like you said, a monastery, in a culture where we are being told that, it is absolutely impossible to make it to marriage, being a virgin, and that quite frankly, men are pretty much reduced to being sexual predators who have sexual appetites that cannot be tamed. So I want you to speak to the guys and say, how, by the grace of God, did this happen in your life?
Well, I would start with that point right there, by the grace of God. Mm-hmm. Truly, I, in answering that, in no way would I want to suggest that, or to puff myself up in that. God knows, and I know, how many along the way, teenage years, college, I mean, there's just so many moments of potential stupidity where the Lord was gracious to me. But I do think that there are some basic truths that if you care about purity and if you care about honoring the Lord, that have to be at play. And I shared some of these in the Bachelor Pastor message. I'll maybe review a few of them. But I would first of all say that I don't know how you do it without the Spirit of God. And to have the Spirit of God, you must be a follower of Jesus. So to me, a starting point, a basic starting point, is that Jesus is the Lord of my life. And if that is the case, now my life is not my own, and my body is not my own. Paul talks about that also in Corinthians, honor the Lord with your body. And now that takes a little bit of maturity, and this is where I think so many, you know, even those teenage years where because of pornography and, entertainment and all the rest, where there is such a push and such a, there's so much temptation that often I think young men do things that they very much later regret. But I would say this, just to narrow it down to a few things. One is that you have to kill the flesh, starve the flesh, and feed the Spirit. And by that I mean, if I feed my heart, if I feed my mind sexually explicit or sexually suggestive material, over time, we eventually do what we think. And those fantasies and those lusts will, at some point, there will be some date, some woman, some situation on a business trip or wherever where they finally can give fruit. And the battle doesn't begin when you're on the business trip. It began 5 years before with a decision about what you're going to watch on television and what you're not going to allow yourself to think about. As Jesus said, as a man thinks in his heart, so is he. And so that's really where the battle lies with lust. It begins with lust before it becomes immorality. Second thing I would say is that the kind of woman that you date, the caliber of Christian woman that you date, is probably as important as anything else in making it to purity. And this is where I have been so blessed over the years get to know and spend time with some really high-quality Christian women who also have a commitment to purity. And that's where, you know, the temptation is so strong. Anyway, even if you're at least, I think, trying to be godly, the desire is just, it's so strong. If you date a woman who does not have a high commitment to purity, the combination of that in the kind of closeness and intimacies of dating is a very, very hard thing to overcome. So I would encourage dating women who are very committed to purity. The third thing is that I think that in our moments with a renewed mind, we have to decide what is acceptable and what is not physically. If I have to try to decide that when I'm, you know, having all the rush of emotions and feelings for a girl, then I'm in trouble. Best to do it when I've had the Bible open, I've been in prayer, and say, what do I want to have said? What do I want to tell my son someday that I did? What do I want to tell my daughter? What encouragement do I want to give? And to set those parameters. And my practice was to communicate those very early in the relationship. This is what, these are my boundaries. And I found that godly women like that, because they don't have to wonder what you're doing, you know, when you put your arm around her, or where your hand is going, you know, as you're watching the television or whatever. It makes it clear, and it builds a level of trust, and it establishes integrity. But the biggest thing is, I think, that you have to overcome these lesser desires with a greater desire, a greater passion, which as a Christian, my ultimate desire, my biggest desire, has to be to honor the Lord, to please the Lord, to not do anything that would displease Him. And, you know, I had plenty of moments along the way of, you know, immaturities and embarrassments and such, but in the big picture, my bottom line is I want to please the Lord. And if I can stoke that passion through the means of grace that God has given, through the church, the word, prayer, spirit, fellowship, accountability, all those things that help to create the bigger desire, I find that can overcome even the desires to be sexual with a woman that I'm dating. And even my mind desires, my lustful desires, they can be overcome, and you can make it. I guess maybe that's what I'm saying. You can make it with God's help and the Spirit and doing the prudent and wise measures. You can make it. And I also want to say to that, there thankfully is also grace and forgiveness when we don't. And that's got to be said as well, because that's the gospel.
Yeah.
And that needs to be clear.
Okay, so you are now, we've said this several times, you're now married a couple months in, and, you know, kind of on inheriting this story that now is going to have a whole new set of joys, a whole new set of challenges, a whole new set of opportunities for growth. What can you see now, Steve, even 2 months in? What's been one of your biggest surprises, as far as like a good surprise about being married? And what's something that maybe you are realizing, oh yeah, here's like a little point of selfishness I had, or something I'm going to have to adjust my expectations on, or something I'm going to have to grow in, something that you're just like, yeah, this isn't just a cakewalk. As you said earlier, marriage is not here to solve all of my problems. This is something that's going to be an ongoing means of sanctification. What are a couple examples of that?
Yeah. Well, I think the thing that I've enjoyed the most is the companionship. It really is great to wake up in the morning. One of my favorite things, and again, I'm only 2 months in here, but one of my favorite things in the morning, in those sort of groggy moments as you're kind of waking up, the room's getting lighter, the sun's coming up, is to just reach over and to find a hand, and the hand squeezes. You know, I spent all these years sleeping alone, living alone, and to have that daily reminder that there is somebody that not only is with me, but that is for me. That's been great. Mm. You go to the grocery store and there's somebody with you, and there's just Eugene Peterson calls marriage a long conversation. Mm-hmm. And we're early in our conversation, but I'm enjoying that kind of day in and day out experience of togetherness. Because I dealt a lot with loneliness over the years. I've written about that, and mm-hmm. I'm enjoying that. I think the thing that I'm seeing is what my Bible also tells me, and that is that I'm a sinner who married a sinner. Mm-hmm. And the honeymoon.
It's hard that we have to be reminded of that, you know.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
You know, I've joked, I didn't have bad breath until I got married, you know, and which is pointing out the fact that things that have always been true for me now are being really unveiled in terms of my own need to have things this way or that and to be in control. And, I just have, it's marriage is a mirror. You just, this mm-hmm. mirror goes up, and you have to look at yourself in a way that I think when you're single, you don't necessarily have to as much, because there's nobody in your business pointing out contradictions and inconsistencies. And so it has, I think that's been eye-opening, but that's where it's good. Cause if I don't see them, I can't work on them.
Yeah.
So,
it's like my friend said, I never realized how selfish I was until I got married, and I never realized how angry I was until I had kids. So she thought she was doing pretty well, living a pretty pretty godly life until others came into it, and all of a sudden, hey, who moved my cheese? So yeah, that's good. Well, Steve, any last minute thoughts just to an audience out here of single young adults who are kind of maybe a few steps behind you in this journey and hoping for marriage maybe, but wanting to really glorify God where they are right now, just things that you've gleaned or anything you want to share as a word of encouragement?
Oh, of course. I just want to thank you for the chance to be on the show and to share some things out of my own experience. But I just would encourage, Tim Keller talks about this in his book on marriage, that one of the things that when you're single, it's so easy to put marriage too high. And when we do that, we're making more of it than we ought. I think there are many people that put it too low, for sure, but for people like me, at least, I think I put it too high. And if we can see ourselves for who we are, not as married or single, but who we are in Christ, and allow that other category to find its proper place, now I can approach my life, my day, from a perspective where that day matters and my life has meaning because of who I am in Christ. And I find that very freeing. I am very discouraged. My loneliness feels worse. I'm totally upset when I look at myself through an unmet expectation. And in Christ, we have all that we need. And if I can find that kind of worship moment and that sense of the greatness of knowing Christ, then I think these other things can find their proper place, and we can live single to the glory of God. I tried to do that. I did it imperfectly. I had some moments where I maybe enjoyed that, but looking back on it, I just would so encourage. I would so encourage that. So, singles, enjoy your singleness. If God brings a spouse to you, enjoy the privileges of that. But don't make any of those categories ultimate. Only God is.
All right. Well, Steve, thanks so much for your candor and for your humility, really, in walking us through a good portion of your own story and what God has taught you throughout the years and is even now going to teach you in the ones to come. So I just want to thank you for really opening up and being willing to let us in and learn from you.
Really happy to do it. And God's blessings on you all.
All right. Well, hey, Steve is, again, the pastor of Bethel Church in Crown Point, Indiana. His sermons are online, so you can certainly find them there. We'll make sure that we link to his site. And he's also, his sermons are featured on Moody Radio, WMBI, out of Chicago, which I'm on actually now on Thursdays. So, hey, we're both on the same station. So
wow.
Kind of fun. I know. I don't give...
Congratulations.
I give sermons, but they're just kind of informal ones. So that's how I do my preaching. But, and again, remember, he is also the author of the book, Eyes Wide Open, Enjoying God in Everything. So we'll make sure that we direct you that way as well. So again, Steve, thanks so much. And we'll hopefully hear, you know, some updates on you and Jennifer's story. And that'll be exciting. Those who are interested in following you at the Gospel Coalition, they can do that as well. So thanks again.
Happy to do it. Happy to do it. Thank you.
It's your heart that keeps you running. It's your mind that I can't change. And will you ever be returning and coming back again? Coming back again, yeah. Take me back to the place where it started. Take me back to the warmth of the sun. To the place where the your heart that keeps you running.
Well, hey, everyone. We are opening up this week's inbox, and I have Sam Moorcroft on the line. Hey, Sam.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing well. You're just up there in Canada, aren't you?
Yeah. Okay. Just tail end of that Hurricane Sandy hitting us now.
Oh, yes, I know. Well, we've been getting the updates here, so Glad to hear you are safe in that. Yeah. Sam, as you folks know, is with ChristianCafe.com. He's the founder of that. And so, of course, we're going to be talking about online dating here. And so let me go ahead and read this listener's question. They say, at nearly 30 years old, I find myself still single, so I decided to give online dating a try. I filled out a profile on a dating website, and for a few weeks, there were quite a few Christian guys who reached out to me. But after communicating to the point when I thought I should mention I'm committed to purity, one after the next ceased communication with me. So I decided to make note of the fact that I believe God designed intimacy for marriage directly in my profile, and the inquiries have come to a standstill. Could it be that I'm making my stand on premarital sex too early in the game? Should I perhaps allow a man to decide if he's interested first and ease into this discussion later on?
Sure. Well, a couple things. One thing that jumps out at me right away, she mentions that she was on a dating site, and she talks about there were quite a few Christian guys who reached out to me, which leads me to believe that this is not a Christian dating service. It's a secular dating service, because the if you were on a site like ChristianCafe.com, the assumption is that everybody is on there who is a believer. And so if only the few Christian guys who wrote to her, that implies it's just on a secular dating site. So point number one, it's very hard in our experience, and mine personally when I was using dating services many years ago, to meet quality Christians on secular dating services, because you have to go through that initial getting to know somebody, finding out what they mean when they put down that they are a Christian. Do they mean they were born in the States? Do they mean that they are born again? So that's point number one. And the second one is, I think that she has every right to basically stand up for her principles and what God has taught us, that sex is reserved for marriage. And so I think it's entirely natural to basically deal with people who believe what you believe. And so going to my first point, if you're on a Christian dating service such as ChristianCafe.com, you're less likely to encounter that. Not that you won't. Unfortunately, within the Christian community, just like in the secular world, you'll find people who are not living up to godly standards in every aspect of their lives, but you're less likely to find it. But I do think it's important to say, I'm a Christian, here's what I believe, and what we all ought to believe, and I want to meet somebody who meets those standards, because if they're not meeting that standard, what other standards aren't they meeting about their Christian faith? Somebody present, you know, who's having sex outside of marriage, what's their faith like? I can't see how it can be on fire for God when they're actually disobeying one of the key commandments around marriage and having sex outside of marriage. So my advice would be to not compromise your principles at all. In fact, not just about the sex outside of marriage, don't compromise any of your fundamentals. It's okay, you know, certain practices that certain denominations have that are really not that important, but when it comes to the fundamentals, I think it's critically important that men and women stand up for what's right, and my advice is take your time, because it takes time to find a quality man or woman of God, and you'll be a lot happier with the result. I know, sadly, too many friends and friends of friends who have settled for less than that, and then their marriage is never what it ought to be, and unfortunately, in a lot of the cases, their marriage has ended up breaking up. So there's a reason that God wants us to be equally yoked, and it's not just because he's put down these rules, but they're designed for a purpose and for us to live fulfilling lives in marriage and following God's perfect plan for us.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I know when I was online, that was one of the first questions I would put out there, because it allowed me to weed out literally about 70% of the guys that I was talking to, because many are self-described Christians, and maybe they mean that they're Christians because they live in North America, or they're Christians because they grew up in Texas, or who knows what reason. But I found that that was a great question to weed guys out with. And really, my advice to her would be, yeah, you don't want to delay this conversation. And, you know, this guy's not going to change his mind or all of a sudden have this great, you know, issue of conscience because you just waited to bring it up. I mean, it's better to bring it up now, because really the danger is in building an emotional connection with this guy online and then finding out down the road that, oh, actually on some of the very important values, we don't align. And so I think that what you said is good there, Sam.
Oh, thank you.
As always, we want you to submit questions to us at editor@boundless.org so we can answer your question on a future show. And we've started to get more questions in about the whole issue of online dating and how to go about it biblically and intentionally. So we like answering those and are glad when people like Sam can come in and weigh in on that. That is it for this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.